Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, Mike Zlatnik. Today, it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome Ryan Parson. Hi, Ryan.
Hey there, Mike. How are you today?
I'm great. And how are you?
I am absolutely fantastic. We're having beautiful weather out here in the Rocky Mountains in Aspen, so I have no complaints.
That's right. That's the skiing capital of the United States.
Well, at least one of them. Of course, us locals think it's the best one. So,
oh, it certainly is a great one. Absolutely. And Ryan, let me just introduce you a little bit to the audience. You are a chairman and a chief investment officer at the Heritage Capital USA, Inc., the Mile Marker Club, and you're also the director of investment relations at the Colonial Capital Management. You're also a renowned national speaker on alternative investing and portfolio management. Did I miss anything important?
Well, you're being very kind, but that's probably a good start to it anyway, which just sounds like a bunch of big words. I've been just very fortunate, Mike, as you know, growing up in a family of real estate investors. So from my humble beginnings in the Midwest, raised into a farm family and real estate investing family, it has brought me to where really I am today. And of course, as you know, growing up and your parents doing what they were doing with real estate investments, I was like, no, I can't go do that. I don't want to go do what mom and dad did. And, you know, found myself in a corporate America job in financial services and financial planning, which I absolutely love. But of course, my wealth has all been based in alternative investments. And so I, you know, that upbringing, it's kind of funny, Mike, how it all kind of comes full circle after a while. So I was just grateful for that. And, you know, being able to do, you know, what we were always taught to do, as you know, Mike, was to go to school, get a good job, get a good education, you know, get a good long-term job. And hopefully you've got a 401k plan or a retirement plan of some sort afterwards, and you go off and live your life. And it was just, you know, I watched how hard my grandparents worked, you know, farming and 7 day a week and laborious. I certainly watch how hard and dedicated my parents are to their real estate practice. But I will tell you what, as you know, going through corporate America and doing those gyrations, it was really seeing my own personal 401k when I was still working at the time after 19 years, not having any more money into it. And but for my employer making contributions to the plan, I would have actually lost money in my 401k by solely investing in traditional investments. And so that's really been a big part of the impetus to why I do what I do today for other accredited investors from both a financial strategy standpoint and bringing alternative investments to the table to choose from.
And thank you for that great overview. So when did you make the leap? How did you jump from the corporate world into the alternative investment universe?
Looking back on it now, it really wasn't, it didn't seem like much of a leap, although at the time it certainly was, which was, almost 7 years ago now. It'll be 7 years ago this summer. And I had spent 19 years with the same company in the financial services sector. And by all accounts, I had a good job. I was, you know, highly compensated. I had great benefits, you know, company car, pension plan, you know, got nice travel rewards and, you know, all the things that the financial services industry tends to do when you're, you know, performing the way you want them to be or they want you to be performing. And working with so many other investors, high net worth investors, high net worth families, accredited investors, on talking about traditional stocks, traditional mutual funds, traditional bonds, traditional money market accounts, Mike, in terms of how do you grow your wealth, preserve your wealth, pass that wealth down if you have multiple generations. And it was all largely traditional investments and other traditional types of products, you know, life insurance, your typical annuities, those types of things. Yet, of course, because of my upbringing, real estate and real estate related assets, or alternative investments, kind of the bigger universe of alternative investments, as of course is where I was investing my money, which brought about a whole different type of return for the risk that we were taking on. And of course, still are heavily involved in that today. And really seeing true wealth being created because we control it. We control our alternative investments. As you know, my traditional stock market investments, we have zero control over. I know Wall Street is just maybe down the door from you, so to speak, living in New York, but we have zero control over. We have zero control over those money managers. We have zero influence into how deals are done, what types of deals are being done, and otherwise what is truly being done with our money. And I realized there was starting to become a chasm for me of what I was having to talk about, because that's what I was told to do as my job. But real wealth was not really created with traditional investments. And it's not that traditional investments don't necessarily have a role in all of our portfolio, but real wealth, real control, real influence, real what does this mean for my wealth really only occurs inside of alternative investments. And so about, like I said, about 7 years ago, I woke up one day and realized, fortunately, that, you know, but again, I had great family upbringing, great mentors. You know, the good Lord above was shining down on me to say, you know what, Ryan, you need to be doing something else. And, you know, I was looking at the checkbook and realized I was making more money passively through my passive investments, Mike, and being, you know, investing with other really solid deal operators like you and your fund that were paying it to use my money as I invested with them more than I was making as a corporate executive. And even though I liked what I was doing with at least the people I was doing it with, maybe not so much what I was doing, I realized there was a greater good. And, you know, of course, I'm grateful for the financials that come with it, but really not just the financial freedom that alternative investments have brought myself and my family, but the life freedom, you know, to be able to come and go and do and live our best lives.
So Ryan, let me jump straight into what you do, into the crux of the benefits you provide to folks that come in and want to escape the Wall Street. We don't need to sell them on that. We all know at this point, Wall Street is not the place to be, but the alternative investments universe is a land of control and land of much better opportunities if you know what you're doing. So how do you approach, if you take a client from high net worth individual, a professional like a dentist, or anybody who wants to escape the world of unpredictable
roller coaster of stock market returns and go into the world of alternative investments, real estate being one of the main components of that. So what's your approach to building their portfolio? How do you build a plan for them? What do you do? Can you dive a little bit into that?
Sure. So as you mentioned in your kind introduction, Mike, there's two critical components to what we do today. The Heritage Capital USA side of our house focuses on the deal, alternative deal flow investment, sourcing deal flow, working with deal operators, helping to structure the deal to the specifications of our investors. And it's on the Mile Marker Club side of the house. That's Mile Marker Club, being from Colorado here, is what really focuses on the needs of our fellow high net worth accredited investors. And what I really realized after 19 years and more of the traditional financial services and traditional financial planning, Mike, is that there is a massive chasm for the $2 to $20 million net worth kind of first generational wealth investor that has realized or has come to realize what you and I already know, that traditional stock market investing is not the way. And so we realized we needed to focus and provide some more solutions and provide some more credibility to helping those investors create a holistic and a plan for success of investing in alternative investments. And so what we really strive to do is be a really strategic coach and a strategic partner, because we are at our core our investors ourselves. And unlike your Wall Street stockbrokers or your traditional financial planners, they are not necessarily investing in what you are investing in. You know, you say to them, Mike, you know, I'm thinking about buying some rental properties, or I'm thinking about buying some discounted notes, or I'm thinking about investing in a, you know, private placement, non-publicly traded fund. I mean, Mike, you know, the traditional advisor looks at you like you got three heads. You know, that's not possible. There must be something wrong with that. It's got to be too good to be true, and all the other, you know, hogwash that we hear from the traditional world. But in reality, the reason that they do that is those traditional advisors, not only are they not trained, of course, they don't get paid really to sell those products to you, but they don't invest in them themselves. And chances are you as the investor have more experience than they do, and you're going to be teaching them. So it's no wonder that there's such that disconnect and that kind of that butting heads with the traditional advisory world. And so we wanted to be able to change all of that for that hardworking first generational wealth investor that wanted to be better aligned with the community of other successful investors in the alternative investment space, but also bring some of those creative, unique strategies that really high net worth investors need to be able to have, whether that's working with self-directed IRAs, but understanding whatever you're doing with an investment, how it attaches to the other tentacles of your wealth, whether that's your estate plan, might be your business. A lot of our clients, Mike, as you know, they're small business owners, and they're very successful small business owners. And so they're wanting to be able to make sure that what they are investing in is supporting their holistic plans and most importantly, their life. I mean, we really strive to be able to show and teach and help construct strategies and structures that allow our fellow investors, our Mile Marker Club members, to really go to be living their best lives, and not 30 years from now or 40 years from now when you quote unquote retire. I'm talking right now. And I've just, again, I've had the good fortune to be able to experience that, save a lot of money, invest a lot of money. But because of the alternative investments that provide that coveted passive cash flow today, I do get to live my best life and allow my business, of course, of what we do today, to revolve around my life. Because for most of us during our working careers, Mike, it's our life has to revolve around our work. And that is a key difference that we really strive to work with our members to help them find that right balance of realizing our life is what's at the center, and we need to let the rest of it fold around that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does, for sure. I think it's a great answer. And I follow the same philosophy. You build your business around your life, not your life around the business. Otherwise, the business can consume your life.
That's right. So,
from that standpoint, we're exactly on the same page. And we absolutely don't need to spend a lot of time confirming what the traditional advisors do. They actually, you know, I know a few of them, let me put it this way, and they can't sell alternative investments for a couple of reasons. One is they have no way to get paid, number one. Number two, they can't, their big corporation has no ability or no desire to review smaller investment opportunities. So a lot of real estate in nature is small. It's not big, massive corporate buildings. Now, most of the small projects, small syndications, value-add projects are generally small in nature. So a big corporation just cannot spend time on these little projects because there's no economy of scale. Right. So all that is just sort of shuts down that whole universe. But let's go back into the alternative investments, real estate specifically. Mm-hmm. So when you look at your deals, and I guess that's through the heritage, looking at the deals, how do you differentiate if investors that you're working with, they need kind of investment grade quality deals, strong cash flow, strong downside protection, limited speculation. How do you help them choose those type of projects? How do you know which projects are a good fit for them and which projects are not good fit for them? Could you elaborate on this a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. And the question is a very pertinent one, Mike, to all of us as investors, because where we choose to invest our capital at the end of the day is a very personal decision. You've worked very hard. You and your wife, Mike, have built a beautiful portfolio on your own, and you've built it from the ground up. You know where every dime of your investment capital today has come from. And so the relationship that we have with our money starts to dictate where we would consider deploying it into various different private deals or alternative investment deals. And so looking at that, because it's very individually based, and again, part of our difference is that we don't tell our investors or even recommend to our investors, our Mile Marker Club members, here, do this or do that. Rather, we really unfold and help them unfold that strategy that's best for them. Because Mike, you and I've looked at deals, you know, all kinds of deals together. And you know, you've looked at deals and you've personally invested in them, but I haven't. Or deals I've invested in that you have. It's not that there's anything wrong with the deals. It's just it doesn't necessarily make sense for somebody's portfolio at the same time that it makes sense for another person's. For example, like you mentioned, some people right now, while they're still working, they've got great successful businesses, Mike, they may look at a private deal, which is a great deal on its surface, but it's providing current income and may presumably taxable income, and they don't need any more income currently.
Right.
They would rather be focused on some types of private or alternative deals that have more of a growth factor to them.
That's right.
And so that's, you know, one of the examples that we start to look at, that it's really based on, you know, what you need at any one moment in time. Because and a lot of times, and this is where the power of the relationships working with, you know, all-star fund managers like you that come into play, where you really help to try and bring individual deals to your investors that are kind of structured to their needs. And so many times as private investors, Mike, if we're not connected to the right circles and have access to the right deal flow, we get deals brought to us and they're already baked. And so if we know we want to be in the alternative space, sometimes we just succumb to, well, this is just what's available, so that's what I have to do. Absolutely not. When you have the relationships and are connected to a community that has other successful investors, that is being led by investors, you know, I'm not talking about seminar and training gurus here, you know, actual investors that are investing their money right alongside you, that's where you start to learn more about what it is, the types of deals that you need. So another example that we really work really closely in helping our members to develop, not just their risk tolerance through knowledge, but as you mentioned, start off with determining how much passive cash flow might an investor need today, or how they are looking at it in the future. Again, if they've got a great job right now, great business, they might not need cash flow. But as I was able to experience, I had a great job. I really didn't need any more passive cash flow, but I was trying to better position my portfolio to support my life, my work, my life's work, my aspirations, because quote unquote working at a job wasn't getting the job done. So what I started to realize is that I wanted to be able to focus more even on passive cash flow. And that was even at the age of 35, to become financially free. And a lot of, you know, investors say that, Mike, oh, I want to be financially free. I want to be financially free. Just tell me what to do. And you know what? If it were that easy, instead of only 4% of the U.S. population being accredited, as the SEC would define it as, that $1 million of net worth excluding the primary residence, 96%, Mike, of our fellow citizens would be millionaires. The reality of it is it's not easy and it doesn't happen over time. And it really starts with that knowledge and starting to dig deep of how much time do I want to commit to being a better investor or being an investor of private investments? Because typically, when you work in the traditional world, if you just abdicate your wealth to a financial planner who goes and invests it for you, you abdicate your capital to your stockbroker who just, you know, goes and picks stocks for you. In the private alternative investment space, that doesn't happen. And so being one of the, you know, elements that we really work with our members on is helping them to understand what is their commitment to this, because nobody is going to manage their wealth or care about their wealth or care about their money more than they do. And that's a big shift, a big mental shift, Mike, to make from the traditional investing space where the stockbroker, the financial planner just kind of does it, to you taking full control over it. So how you, as an investor, you start to identify what types of deals are appropriate for me really starts with identifying what type of private investor are you going to be? And that is a big shift and a big commitment that you have to start to make to yourself, because otherwise you're just going to just start seeing deals fly through or come across your desk, and you're not really going to know how to understand what makes a good deal for me. And so I think that's really where it starts at for investors, you know, looking to expand their footprint in the alternative investment space or begin their footprint in the alternative investment space.
Ryan, thank you. That's a great point. You're helping folks learn how to be better investors and not leaving investment decisions to a financial advisor who just picks and chooses an easy path. You click this button and you invest in this mutual fund, then it takes care of you. Mm-hmm. Instead, I certainly appreciate your position, because I'm the same way. I believe that by educating investors, you're giving them the tools necessary to help make their own decisions. And you're right, from the point of view that their own situation, whether they're still working or not, they're trying to shift capital out of non-cash flowing assets into cash flowing assets. It's different for different folks. Some people don't want the cash flowing assets because of tax implications, and some do. So it's kind of it's a personal decision. But I completely subscribe to the theory. You're letting people discover themselves, know themselves, right? They're able to understand what they want to do with their lives and where their capital is today and where it needs to be. It might help to make the better decisions in what they want to invest into. That makes great sense. Mm-hmm. So very quickly, as you're talking with folks, let's just say they still have active income, and that income is significant, and they're in a high tax bracket. Mm-hmm. So what basic strategies do you use to minimize taxation, at the same time give them an opportunity to enjoy growth and opportunities, but don't invest in speculative stuff? Again, some folks may prefer speculative investments, mm-hmm. but just kind of my view is, if people are shifting from the stock market, they should first pick some kind of foundation, build the foundation of the house, and select some investment grade deals first before they go into speculative stuff. Mm-hmm. Although it may be different. If you have a lot of money and you're willing to put it into a lot of speculative deals, maybe that's a way to go. It's different for different strokes for different folks, for sure.
It absolutely is. And, you know, identifying, you know, this idea of more investment grade, at least in the scope of alternative investments, to speculative. You know, one of those elements that we really look at, Mike, and I think is a critical foundation for every investor that's in alts, is you have to look at what is the asset behind the asset, or what is the deal behind the deal. And what I mean by that, if you just take a very basic of a real estate example, and as a private investor, you become a private lender, lend capital to, say, a fix and flip rehabber to buy the property, rehab the property, and hopefully sell it for a profit. Your asset that you created was the loan when you made the loan to the professional rehabber. But the asset behind the asset is the piece of real estate securing that loan. And that's part of the great element of the country, Mike, and that investing in real estate. There's something physical, there's something tangible, there's something behind that. And that if the deal blows up, the loan blows up for whatever reason, you still have the piece of real estate. And so that's why it's such a popular asset class or sector, rather, to for most investors, especially when they're new into the alternative space, to enter into the real estate sector. But there are a lot of other kinds of collateral out there that as investors, especially as we grow, we don't normally see. And Mike, you know these types of deals as well as I do, but you might find a business that, you know, is got a large, they just secured a large contract, but that contract, till they can get going on it, they have to do some staffing up, for example, or buy some new equipment. Well, that cash from that new big contract sale is sitting in an escrow account, but they can't get access to it to go buy their new equipment to fulfill the contract. And so, you know, you look at that escrow account, we might advance a loan to that business, but take that cash escrow account cash as collateral.
Yeah.
And that's another form of collateral, like real estate, life insurance, cash values. I mean, we see businesses all the time, Mike, that are growing and expanding and have beautiful, beautifully funded cash value, whole life insurance contracts, funding their buy sell agreements. You know, if there's a key employee that unfortunately passes away, but because of their operating agreement, they can't go take a loan against the otherwise inexpensive cash value on their life insurance policy. But yet, as a private investor, we can go make a loan and utilize that cash value as collateral as quickly as they default on the loan. We call the insurance company and surrender the policy and we get paid off. Again, it's another example of cash. And so we could go on and on and on about that. And there's different structures and some of it might get a little exotic from time to time. But what you have to realize when you're looking at private deals that are in investment grade, as you say, Mike, versus something speculative like a venture capital type equity deal. Again, it's not that there's not opportunities with that, but you have to look more creatively maybe at your collateral. And so I hope that helps to kind of describe what that downside protection might look like in an investor's portfolio that's trying to figure out what they're comfortable with and identifying their own risk tolerance for different types of deals. And I think the other question that you were asking, Mike, was taxation. Right. Real, I know you work with a lot of high net worth investors. We obviously do as well in our various family of private funds and obviously in the Mile Marker Club. And taxes are a big deal. And it's obviously a factor. You make money, you pay taxes. That's just how our tax code in this country works. And so one of the things, though, because it is a big question that we get asked all the time is, oh my gosh, Ryan, I feel like I'm paying too much in taxes. And, you know, kind of the natural question is, well, are you paying too much in taxes or are you paying what you should be? Well, in almost every case that comes to us for our members that, you know, engage in a higher tax optimization or tax efficiency planning strategy is that it boils down to, it's not the CPA, Mike. I hate to burst your bubble. You know, everyone wants to go and blame it on the CPAs. Ah, the CPAs sent me too big of a tax bill. Well, that might be part of the issue, but the bigger issue is really as an investor, as a taxpayer, we simply are not organized enough to know ourselves what should we be paying taxes on and what we shouldn't. You know, Mike, we're in the middle of tax season right now. I'm sure you got your tax questionnaire, you know, the 30 or 40 page questionnaire that your CPA sent you and your wife, just like my CPA sent to me to fill out and try to figure out everything that went on last year. They work on a information in, information out mentality. And if as the investor about our wealth, remember, Mike, no one cares more about our wealth than we do. No one cares more about you and your wife's wealth than you and your wife do. And so therefore, it's incumbent upon us to be extremely organized and provide very relevant, pertinent information to our tax preparer. And I'm going to give you an example of that. We have a lot of investors that, you know, invest in discounted notes. So they buy performing loans secured by a piece of real estate and, you know, start pay whatever they pay for. And then they immediately start receiving that passive cash flow every month. Well, in a discounted note situation, and really in any note situation where you're collecting a principal and interest payment, Mike, what is taxable is the interest payment, interest portion of that payment, not the principal. But if you don't provide that very specific breakdown throughout the course of the year, hey, Mr. or Mrs. CPA, yes, this was the full amount of deposit into my account. However, only this portion of it was actually taxable income that I should be paying taxes on. And if you as the investor, or we as the investor, can't properly articulate that, Mike, it's we see it constantly with new members coming in. So if you feel you're paying more in taxes than what you should be, chances are you probably are, but not because you're not taking advantage of all the availability. Well. Yeah, exactly. You're just not feeding the right information. So what it really starts off for us, what we've discovered over the years, not only help to manage our own tax liability, but help our members manage it for themselves. You have to be organized. You have to understand how all of these components of your wealth, and I realize the higher net worth we are, the more complex that becomes, but it's all the more reason why we call wealth organization is so critical to bring all those together, and that you've got the proper elements to come in so you can use, for most of our members anyway, for the first time, they can actually see and start to feel control over their tax bill, because we're starting to project that for next year already, for the year after that, for 5 years from now, from 10 years from now. Because, Mike, as you very well know, once December 31st comes, there's nothing you can do about your taxes. Now, granted, your CPA, you know, you might do this, file this LLC or file that S-Corp or something like that, but in terms of your deals, in terms of your business, you can't go back and either undo a deal or wish you have done a deal differently after December 31st. And so the only way you can try to get ahead of that is being able to project out the year after, the year after, the year after. Your CPA is only telling you what happened last year. Right. And it's too late at that point. And so once again, you have to have control. You have to have those tools. You have to have those knowledge to start seeing your tax liability through different lens. And most importantly, in a time frame when you actually have the ability to change it and do something about it, because it's never after the fact. And so that being much better organized allows you to have greater control over your wealth, which allows you to provide greater, more precise data to your tax preparers to allow them to then do their best job to find the abilities to be able to do that. But you don't want to pay taxes on income that is not taxable, is the point. And if you can't properly communicate that, that rests back on us too, you know, as an investor. And we found that that organization is the best first step to getting better control of the tax bill.
Yeah, that makes sense. From what I heard from you, your step number one is to help investors see, or at least communicate better with their CPA on what they've got. Just at least understand, and if they don't know what is an amortization schedule, that's basic as it goes.
That's right.
But the forward-looking planning is critically important to help them plan their financial tax liabilities a year down the road, 2 years, and so forth. Yeah, CPAs are mostly reactive unless they have financial planning services.
Correct.
But most of them are just, you know, they're the bean counters. They'll count the beans and they'll report the beans and tell you how much of a check to write to the government. And you help them prepare for the future, what the future beans going to look like in, you know, one or more years, well, hopefully many years down the road.
That's right. Makes sense.
Very quickly for the audience, we're running a little bit out of time. So I wanted to ask, how would people get a hold of you if they need some help with the financial planning, they need some help with alternative assets, allocations, you know, or just help them clean up their current picture in future years?
Absolutely. So, you know, again, just as a recap, Mike, we are not a traditional financial planning shop. We're not traditional financial advisors here. We're wealth strategists. We've walked in the shoes of other successful high net worth investors in this alternative investment space. And so what we've had to figure out for our family and all these tentacles connected to our tax planning strategies, our estate plan, our multi-generational wealth plan for our family, so on and so forth. We're just being partners with other successful investors that have that. And so, you know, feel free to reach out to us at milemarkerclub.com. And you can learn more about what we do kind of on the wealth strategy side there, or on our deal flow side is the heritagecapitalusa.com, and to be able to do that. So please, happy to visit with any of your audience, Mike. As a matter of fact, I think we even did a little bit of a special offer, just as a little bit of a teaser. If they go to milemarkerclub.com/BigMike, if your audience goes there, we might have a little special offering that your audience can plug into and get some free information there from us. But we certainly want to recognize what you do, Mike, for your investors and for the great management that you do for your funds. So milemarkerclub.com/BigMike.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate your kind word, and knowing you personally for a long time and your level of experience and just intelligence and the very personal approach should make a big difference for folks who are looking for an alternative wealth strategist rather than the traditional financial planner. So I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and experience. And any final thoughts? How about this? Is there a good book or a good tool, a website folks could use? I know you have a lot of software that helps them do financial planning, but just final 30 seconds, final thoughts.
You mentioned a book. We actually have our book in publishing right now, and that's going to be coming out next quarter, Mike, in Q2 2019. So I guess a very selfish plug there. Got some fun anecdotes in there. But you know, one of the things we were just talking about, taxes, and one of the fun little apps that I use, you know, tracking mileage is sometimes extremely challenging to do. And we use a little app called Milebug. At the end of the day, you log the mileage right on the app, and it produces a beautiful report to go to the tax preparer. So we're maximizing those full deductions. So my little tax tidbit for your audience.
Thank you, Ryan. That's a great tip. Thank you kindly.
My pleasure.
Thanks for time. Thank you all for listening. This is the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm the Big Mike, and I appreciate you listening, and talk to you soon again.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.